The Lord be with you. A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Matthew. After he had fed the people, Jesus made the disciples get into a boat and precede him to the other side while he dismissed the crowds. After doing so, he went up on a mountain by himself to pray. When it was evening, he was there alone. Meanwhile, the boat, already a few miles offshore, was being tossed about by the waves, for the wind was against it. During the fourth watch of the night, he came toward them, walking on the sea. When the disciples saw him walking on the sea, they were terrified. "It is a ghost," they said, and they cried out in fear. At once, Jesus spoke to them. "Take courage, it is I. Do not be afraid." Peter said to him in reply, "Lord, if it is you, command me to come to you on the water." He said, "Come." Peter got out of the boat and began to walk on the water toward Jesus. But when he saw how strong the wind was, he became frightened. And beginning to sink, he cried out, "Lord, save me." Immediately, Jesus stretched out his hand and caught Peter and said to him, "Oh, you of little faith, why did you doubt?" After they got into the boat, the wind died down. Those who were in the boat did him homage, saying, "Truly, you are the Son of God." The Gospel of the Lord. I had a priest friend that was fond of calling this gospel story the Scooby-Doo story. Because in Scooby-Doo, they always assume that whatever's happening is because of a ghost. And so apparently that started with the apostles way back when they just thought Jesus was a ghost walking on the water. But in this gospel, we have Peter doing something very surprising. It may not be surprising because we've heard the story before. We can imagine Jesus being out there and having the courage to get out of the boat and walk towards Jesus and miraculously walk on water. But there's kind of a strange detail in this story. Earlier in the Gospel of Matthew, Peter had been called out of his fishing boat, right? Presumably right there near shore, not on a crazy windy day or at stormy seas, but he's called out of the boat to come and follow Jesus. And so he does. He gets out of his boat, the place that he was most comfortable, most familiar, to come to follow Jesus and to figure out what it means to be his disciple. But this story is kind of right in the middle of the Gospel of Matthew, right after we heard last Sunday the feeding of the 5,000, when Peter and the other apostles took the offering, took the few loaves of bread and the fish and gave it to Jesus. And then after he had multiplied it, they're the ones that have to go and distribute it to the people. Right? That Jesus doesn't just kind of magically do that thing and do his God thing and, I don't know, make bread fall from the sky. He has the apostles and Peter actually go and do it. They're not the ones that multiply the loaves, but they are the ones that deliver the miracle, if you will. And I think that's a key difference in understanding this story because, again, if we've heard it before, we might just kind of go through the motions of, okay, oh, okay, we're supposed to trust Jesus and get out of the boat even at the stormy sea and walk towards Jesus and not take our eyes off of him and trust in him. I think that's one level of this story. When I was reflecting on it this week, I thought, you know, it's very strange for Peter to actually tell Jesus, to tell Peter to come out of the boat. That they see Jesus, they recognize him, right? Jesus says, "Take courage, it is I, do not be afraid." And I think my response would be, "Okay, Jesus, come and get in the boat with us." Right? You're maybe in danger out there on the waters, or maybe we want you to make this stormy sea a little bit calmer. So come join us in the boat. And that would be kind of a more logical explanation or a more logical thing to get a solution. But that's not what Peter says. Peter doesn't say, "Jesus, you come here." He says, "Well, if you really are Jesus, command that I come to you on the water." I don't think this is Peter wanting to put himself in danger. In some ways, it is trying to prove that it is truly Jesus. But I think it goes a little bit further than that, especially in this particular context where we're at in the story of the Gospel of Matthew. Because again, the apostles have been following Jesus around, seeing him do things, seeing him preach and teach about God and his law, seeing him work miracles and cure people, seeing him very recently, just the day before, feed 5,000 people with a very meager offering. But up to this point, the apostles really haven't done much of what Jesus is doing. I've kind of witnessed Jesus, not necessarily at a distance, but very rarely up to this point has Jesus told them to go and do anything. Just kind of been observing Jesus. But at this point, the story changes, especially for Peter himself. A few chapters from now, Peter will finally proclaim that you are the Christ, the Son of the living God, the one sent into the world. And that's when Jesus changes his name from Simon to Peter. That's also when, shortly after, Jesus tells him that they have to suffer and take on their cross and he is going to be killed. And Peter says, no, I won't let that happen. And Jesus rebukes him and says, get behind me, Satan. You're thinking not as God does, but as human beings do. That's just to say that Peter doesn't quite have it all figured out yet at this point in the story. He's still learning how to follow Jesus and who Jesus really is. What I think changes in this scene is that Peter actually wants to do the things that Jesus does. But it's at this point in the Gospel of Matthew that Peter is no longer just a passive observer. He's not just there to see the good things that Jesus does and maybe rejoice in them, maybe even tell some neighbors and other people about it, but really for the most part, just to kind of tag along with Jesus. It's at this point that Peter's saying, I actually want to do the things that Jesus does. Maybe participating somehow in that multiplication of the loaves to feed the 5,000 in their moment of need. That in this moment, as they're there on the rocky seas, he doesn't just say, Jesus, I need you to come fix the problem. He actually says, Jesus, I want to be with you. Even if that means that I have to go out on the waters. Even if that means doing something that by my own I can't do, i.e. walk on water. I want to be with you and do the things that you do. Not just be a passive observer of the things that you're doing in your ministry. I think that's often what God is inviting us to do each and every Sunday Mass is, yes, to listen to him, to passively receive the grace and gifts that he wants to give us. But also as we're sent back out into the world, to say, Lord, I actually want to go and do the things that you do. I want to participate in that good work of sanctifying my family and the world around me. That I don't do that just as kind of a burden. As well, I guess if we follow Jesus and believe in him, well, that means we have to do all these nice things for people. Instead of saying, no, Lord, I want to be like Peter that wants to go out to trust in you, to do the things that you do. Not to be a passive disciple and recipient, but be an active one that is sent out. Actively sharing the good news, but also actively loving my neighbor as you have loved me. Sometimes that happens in very dramatic ways that we hear how God's calling us to love people around us. Oftentimes it happens in much more subtle or quiet circumstances. That's what the first reading about the prophet Elijah is reminding us. That up to this point with Elijah, there's a lot of connections between Elijah and Moses. It's like Moses defeated the pagan gods of the Egyptians through the 10 plagues. So Elijah had basically defeated the fertility god when he made this rain come after 3 years of drought and showed that Yahweh was truly the one true God. That he had shown that he goes to seek the Lord, especially on mountains, much like Moses did on Mount Sinai. And so then we have Elijah in today's reading kind of running and trying to be safe from the people that are trying to harm him. And he goes up a mountain again. He goes up this mountain, Horeb, where God has appeared before. We might expect God to show up like he did with Moses. And when Moses goes up Mount Sinai to receive the Ten Commandments, we see there's a big, huge storm that scares all the people at the bottom of the mountain. It's kind of the earth quaking. There's this strong wind. And then in the burning bush, God shows up as fire. So don't think these are just three random things that Elijah throws out that God is not present in the earthquake, the wind, and the fire. He's saying, I kind of expected God to show up dramatically, to do something amazing like he did with Moses. surprising part of this story is that God does show up, but it's in a much different way. He shows up, as Elijah describes, in this tiny whispering sound. This isn't just Elijah kind of hearing voices in his head. It's described much more like the quiet voice in our heart, much like we might think of our conscience, when it's kind of speaking to us, but not in necessarily words in our ears, but in a way that directs our lives. And then it says, as soon as Elijah notices that quiet sound in his heart, he hides his face. Again, knowing that when Moses saw God face to face, his face became brilliant. It became shiny. It was changed by encountering God. And so he hides his face, knowing that God is present in that tiny whispering sound. And knowing that God is going to call him, much like Jesus called Peter out of the boat. He's going to call Elijah to come and follow him. Not just to be a passive observer, but actively do the will of God and bring it to the people around him. Brothers and sisters, as we celebrate this Holy Mass, as we bring our own offerings with the bread and wine onto the altar of the Lord, let us pray that we will not just be passive observers. We will seek to actively do the will of God as the prophet Elijah and Peter did in our readings. Let's also pray that we learn from the example of Peter, especially when we're called to do those miraculous things or things that seem humanly impossible, that we always keep our eyes fixed on Jesus Christ, always knowing that it's only with him that we can do these great things. And yes, we have to cooperate with it. We have to do something actively, but it's never accomplished by our own abilities or our own power. Instead, it's always done in communion with him. That as we glorify him and love those around me, we can repeat those words of the apostles when they recognize Jesus. Not saying, truly, I am the Son of God. Truly, I have done great things. But instead saying, truly, you are the Son of God, the one who has come to save us and redeem us.